So, welcome to the premiere issue of Drinking with Comics. I'm your host, Sean C. Baker. This is Mike Wellman. He's one of the two gentlemen that own the fine establishment that we find ourselves drinking and talking about comics in this evening. It's the Comic Bug in Manhattan Beach, California's best comic book store. I lived here for 6 years before I found a good comic book store. The day that I walked in here, I was just like, how had I not found this before?
You call it love at first sight.
I mean, it's an awesome store. They know comics. Everybody that works here is awesome. So we wanted to do something. Mike and I come in almost every week. We talk comics. I love to talk comics. Mike obviously loves to talk comics.
That's what I do.
Our cameraman, Joe Dot Baxter.
What's up, Joe?
He talks comics. So, you know, two things that I'm good at, talking about comics and drinking beer. And I figured, why not put them together and, you know, just see what happens.
We're going to do both tonight.
We are. Right? So, I had intended to buy something different, but I could not find a cold. So we're going to go with Hoegaarden. I've been told it's pronounced Hoegaarden. I don't care. It is delicious.
We're going to drink a different beer every episode,
yes.
I take it.
Yes.
And this is something that people, we're going to tell them about it.
Yes.
We're going to analyze it, or
we're
just going to slam them?
No, we can analyze it. I tend to not drink beer that you slam. Not that
I
don't like to drink fast on some occasions, but life is too short to drink bad beer. I know that's a cliche now with the craft beer explosion, and everybody says that, but it's totally true.
Do we have to finish the six-pack by the time the podcast is over?
Now, here's the thing with Hoegaarden. You will finish the six-pack. Hoegaarden is a beer that I do not often buy because you're going to drink it all. If you buy a 12-pack, it's so delicious, you will drink it all. You will not realize that you're becoming intoxicated until it's too late. You'll think that you are speaking eloquently like this, but in reality, you will be like that. This is bad if you have to drive, obviously. It's bad if you have to deal with anybody other than, you know, perhaps your significant other.
He's not had any yet.
Not yet.
Drink resmurfably.
Exactly.
I hope you don't mind, but I'm gonna pass on the glass.
Don't use that glass.
Do the cheers, but we must cheers.
Salud. Cheers, Joe.
That is yummy. Don't blow up.
Now I'm just gonna tell you that you're cheating yourself by not pouring it because I know with some beers it doesn't matter.
But it needs the air. It needs
with the
oxygen.
Wheat beers. Okay. I mean it makes a difference. However, every man drinks his beer the way that he wants to.
Exactly.
So, Joe, I'll hand you the church key so you can open your beer. Step off camera.
It's like 3D.
Yes, it is like 3D. So, you know.
So, Sean, Bosler. I've never done this before. I'm going to let you guide me through. Well, do you want to talk about the beer first? Did we talk about comics? It's a good beer.
We've kind of already talked about the beer.
It's crisp.
It is. That's a very good word for it. It's very crisp.
Like biting a juicy wheat apple.
That sounds vaguely sexual, I think. Anyway. So we're here to drink. We're drinking. Let's talk about comics.
Cool.
Mike and I have both picked a few things off the shelf to talk about. Fairly current titles. And we're just going to go through the stacks and we're going to talk about them. So do you want to begin? Should I begin?
Well, why don't we talk? I guess I'll start,
okay,
sort of.
Please.
We'll do Miracle Man since that's the newest, hottest. I don't know if it's the hottest, but it's and it's not the newest, actually.
Well, I mean, people have been waiting for it for, 20-something years?
It's the book, you know, that if you've appreciated Watchmen or Sandman or anything like that, this is the soil from which all of that sprang, and I think that's kind of what I told you when you checked it out.
Yeah.
I actually have never read the old Miracle Man myself, even though I know as a comic book salesman, scholar, whatever, I'm supposed to have read it. I know it's great, I'm sure. And it's the book that, to my knowledge, it's the first time Alan Moore, known here. Did you notice his...
this is what I wanted to ask
his title, the original writer?
I didn't understand that. I was like, this has to be Alan Moore, but the history is kind of spotty with the character, being that it was... went from one company, bought by another company, tied up in court,
it's
various writers.
Yeah.
So when I saw that, I'm like, who wrote the modern, but it felt like Moore.
It was Alan Moore, yeah. And it was the first time he did, he pulled the same trick here that he did in Watchmen. In Watchmen, I don't know if you know this or not, and I might be screwing up a few facts, so if you guys know this better than me, I'm no expert. But originally, they were supposed to do a revisionist sort of take on the old Carlton characters,
right,
which was The Question, Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, and I don't know who Silk Spectre was. Phantom Lady, maybe? And you can get, their silhouettes, they kind of match up.
Right.
You know, the owl flies around in something just like Blue Beetle. The question is essentially Rorschach.
Wait, is it Blue Beetle or Black Beetle?
I think it was Blue Beetle. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because DC bought the Carlton characters. Remember, there was a question series?
Not
too long after Watchmen. And, so they bought these Carlton characters, and then I think what happened was Alan Moore submitted his proposal for what he wanted to do, and they thought, well, this is too good not to do, but if we do this with these Carlton characters that we just invested however much money they invested in, I can't imagine it was too much, it's just going to ruin these characters.
Right.
So they had him just basically invent
new characters.
You know,
yeah, basically
sort of based
like,
on
Al,
the
you know,
characters.
You know what we hired you to do? Don't do it. Do it with something else.
Yeah. Create your own character. Which, you know, good for him, even though like he's kind of shunned away any sort of movie money he could have rightfully taken or anything. I mean, he gets the reprint royalties and everything. I don't know what would have happened if those were Carlton characters, not his characters. So by that token, he should probably be a little thankful, I think, to DC and not be so mad.
He is pretty... I don't know if he's mad so much as, like, he has, like, a code that he seems to exist by that is very stringent, it seems like. And he's like the band that, you know, we don't do those songs anymore. Now we do this. He's very much like, I close the door on that. I don't want anything to do with it. He takes it to the extreme where most people would be like, I don't want anything to do with that, but I'll take the money, the royalties. He's like, I don't want to even take my name off it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there's a reason he's not credited. I mean, it would have been, you know, a good marketing thing for Marvel to be able to say that he wrote it.
Right.
And they bought the rights to Miracle Man like 5 years ago. It was a big announcement at Comic-Con and everything. And something must have happened. I think they had to spend even more money to untie. And again, I don't know. I don't know everything that went on. You can Google around and research. But, he did the same thing with Miracle Man that he did with The Watchmen, where he reinvented the wheel, as it were. He took something that, you know, is a fun, hokey comic book idea and reimagined it in sort of a midlife crisis sort of superhero tale.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, about it is there's a whole... So the issue contains an interview with the original creator, then it also contains the first part of Moore's story, which was published in, was it Warrior?
Yeah, the guy that started Warrior, I did a little research on this, and again, all my facts might not be 100% correct, but Warrior was started by a guy that used to run Marvel UK, and he went off and started his own thing with Warrior, and brought Alan Moore along with him, and Alan Moore wrote two features for Warrior. One was Miracle Man, which was essentially Superman, Captain Marvel,
right,
and the other being V for Vendetta,
right,
which was the Alan Moore version of Batman,
right,
for Warrior magazine. Adult takes on these superhero tropes that we know and love. And the guy that started Warrior magazine either knowingly or mistakenly thought he owned the rights to Marvel Man, is what he was called.
Okay.
And they created these comics for Warrior, and then Eclipse came along in the U.S., and I don't remember if it was before Alan Moore was big over here, and then they were like, well, he had this stuff that predated.
Right.
I think it was. I think Swamp Thing was his first major U.S.
thing.
Yeah,
I think that
then,
was really what brought him, because everybody was like, you've just redefined this character, and it's so dark. And I mean, that was basically the beginning of Vertigo, right? Which,
right,
the late 80s and early to mid-90s, Vertigo, I mean, that kept me in comics. That was where I had just followed certain things out of inertia past the point, like X-Men, I've told you before, I read Claremont's run, it ended, I kept reading it for years, and I didn't really like it, but I didn't realize that. So when I realized it, I kind of backed off of comics, and it was the Vertigo stuff.
Yeah.
Specifically, not, I don't want to tangent too much, but specifically Preacher really did it for me, and then Stray Bullets, which wasn't Vertigo, but we'll get to that
later.
That's
good stuff.
However, that was a very large part of comics. I won't go as far as to say mainstream, but Vertigo really became like an option for comic readers. And it was like, you don't have to read about these dudes
right,
with muscles and tights and capes. And
you and I grew up at a very awesome time because, you know, like the generation before us, once they hit their, you know, teenage years and, you know, late or early 20s or whatever, they did outgrow comics, and there weren't a lot of options there. But we were in that magical time when
comics grew with us.
Yeah, Dark Knight and Watchmen and you know, this stuff. And so, you know, Vertigo. So, you know, at a time when we should have been growing out of comics, there was something for us to latch on to.
Yep.
And,
thank
you know,
God.
Yeah, now everybody just kind of takes that stuff for granted. But when those comics were first coming out, and I remember it was like, wow, you know, and a lot of it was above my head, I'm going to be honest with you. Like I was telling you, I've never read Miracle Man because I missed the bus the first time around. I knew about it, but I just never grabbed on. And then as I hope I didn't become too much more sophisticated, but as I became more sophisticated,
I knew
that it didn't end. Right. I knew that they left it hanging, so I was like, well, I'm not going to read a story that doesn't have an ending. So now, supposedly, hopefully they're going to end it, and I can take the ride, you know, on a monthly basis and enjoy it, and I'm excited.
It was a good ride.
Yeah.
Tangenting from that into one of the books that I pulled to talk about. So, you know, as Mike was saying, definitely guys like Moore, Grant Morrison, who I could just talk for like 6 hours about, and I won't. Garth Ennis, well, maybe not so much with the superheroes, but, you know, a lot of these guys, they have now informed the way that the Cape and Tight guys are written. And I think one of the best examples right now, because the superhero books are now more adult. Rick Remender's Uncanny Avengers is just insane. It's so good. I've actually seen there's been a couple letter columns. I generally don't read the letters columns anymore. I used to, like, way back in the day when I read comics, when I also reread the same comic over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a couple letters where people have written and said, you know, I'm disappointed in this book because it's going out of its way to be so adult. My kid wants to read it. Well, I mean, the companies are kind of now staging it where they have the books for the younger kids, and these are kind of for us.
Yeah.
And maybe the, you know, the more sophisticated teenager or whatever, but the stuff that Remender's doing with Uncanny Avengers is amazing. First of all, being that I was a fan of the Claremont run, and especially when I started reading Uncanny X-Men, Chris Claremont's Uncanny X-Men in the 80s, it was when they were in Australia. There was no Charles Xavier, there was no Scott, there was no Jean. I hate Scott and I hate Charles. I'll just say that right off the bat. I hate them.
They had the Gateway dude.
They had Gateway. They didn't have a stealth bomber. They didn't have American Express cards. They didn't have leather jackets. Their costumes were generally in tatters half the time. It was very punk rock. That sounds ridiculous saying that the X-Men was punk rock. They were totally punk rock in the 80s. Not just because Storm had a mohawk for a while and a switchblade.
But that too.
And a switchblade, mind you. Yeah. That's, you know, she could have been a villain on Death Wish, essentially. The Charles Bronson. But, yeah. But anyway. But Remender's clearly a fan. The same way when I watch Joss Whedon's stuff, I know that he grew up reading Chris Claremont's Uncanny X-Men. I know Remender's a fan. I mean, he had Gateway in Uncanny X-Force.
He did, yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, you know, just kind of add what you're saying, too. Like, what I really appreciate about his Marvel stuff, his sort of mainstream thing, is that he does take it to a new level intellectually, but he's not... Don't get mad, because I know you love Grant Morrison, but Grant Morrison, I always feel like he's trying to prove how intelligent he is. And Remender is punk rock. He doesn't... There's no pretense there, and it's just right. Like, you know, tell a good story. Uncanny X-Force, I think it's more gut level emotional sort of writing than it is intellectual.
I definitely agreed, and I don't take that. I mean, I do love Morrison's stuff. His stuff is so heady sometimes that it maybe loses some of what you're talking about. And like Remender, Uncanny X-Force, when it ended, spoilers, there's a sequence where Logan kills his son, Dakin. Right,
something
I was
like
largely unfamiliar with the character, but
how do you cry over a character you don't give a shit about?
I kind of cried. I mean, yeah. It's still the ghost of this is still echoing through this series, and he doesn't, you know, do the Wolverine thing where he claws him or where they fight and he falls off a cliff or what. He drowns him in a puddle. He holds his face underwater long enough in a very, you know, small amount of water, long enough for him to stop living. And
you see our cameraman's face right now. That's, you know, you got to read Uncanny X-Force. It's good stuff.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's always something a lot of people never do with the X-Men as well, because, you know, I stopped after Claremont, or, you know, after I realized I needed to stop after Claremont, and then I read Morrison's new X-Men. We won't get into that. It's brilliant.
It's good stuff.
I didn't come back until this, and it seems to exist outside of most of the rest of what's going on in the X-Men. And not only that, but it feels dire all the time. It never feels like, oh, this is just, you know, a fluff adventure or a fluff fight where obviously, you know, the usual order will be restored and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't know if it's going to last. I won't give you total spoilers. A lot of characters die in this issue of this comic, and it's awesome. I mean,
and even if it doesn't last, I mean, because they all do eventually. All it takes is another writer or another editor to come along.
Yeah, right,
and
exactly.
Back. But right now they're dead, and you hit on something really good there when you said, you know, that this is the only X-Men Avengers book you read. Me too. I mean, I read Deadpool. That's fun, but this takes you back to a day where there was one X-Men book a month, or one Avengers book a month.
It feels so separate.
And I just put horse blinders on. I don't read, you know. No offense to the other X-Men writers.
No. I mean, I actually do. I read the Bendis, the two Bendis books, and it took me a while to believe. I mean, I love Bendis, but he's very prolific, and I can't always afford to read everything. Like, when he was on Avengers, I was, like, with it for a little bit, but then it's, like, these crossovers that are coming out twice a month, and he's on this title and this title. I don't know. He apparently does not sleep, which is fine. His two books, All New X-Men and Uncanny X-Men, are fantastic.
That's right, sis, too, but we'll...
Totally different reasons. This is different. This is, if you don't care about the X-Men, or if you're like us and you're like, I remember those days when there was the one book and it wasn't oversaturated. This, it just, I know it says Uncanny Avengers. There's a reason, because it's a team that's comprised of both X-Men and Avengers, and it's supposed to be the unity to show the world that, yes, you know, humans and mutants can coexist. The team, everybody hates one another. The mutants hate the Avengers. I mean, it's just, it's awesome. It's
and
just
if you read one
bedlam.
Marvel comic, you have to read one Marvel comic a month. This is the one. It was the one that launched the new sort of Marvel Now universe that they're doing, and it is the only one you need to read.
Yeah, it really
I would
is.
Say.
It's so, yeah. Fantastic.
Good stuff. High five. We agree. Yes, we got to find one we disagree on.
We may. Not familiar enough to disagree. I like what I read. It seems, you know, obviously Guardians of the Galaxy, they're getting ready for the movie, which I'm pretty psyched for, I will tell you.
You're murdered. Is that it? You're
I read the first couple issues. Again, with the Marvel price tag at $3.99, I kind of have to censor myself, because if I could afford it, I'd read so much more than I do. This didn't quite make the cut, although I suspect eventually I will go back and buy it and trade. I was telling Mike earlier, before we started shooting, it was weird, in one of the earliest issues, there's a sequence where they're fighting whoever, and Rocket Raccoon, right, is flying around shooting the bad guys, and as he shoots them, he's saying, murdered you, and it was kind of unnerving.
Well, unnerving in the sense that you were thinking, like, there's a little kid reading this, maybe, and
no,
is going to be
no,
inspired,
I
kinda, or?
I feel like, you know what,
did it make you afraid of raccoons?
No, I'm already afraid of raccoons. If you've seen some of the ones that are around my crib, you'd... it was weird. I don't know if it was something about, as I've aged, the word murder. I can't use it or relate to it as frivolous as maybe I did before. I mean, maybe that's just because of world events, whatever.
Gangster rap?
No, I mean, gangster rap's largely ridiculous. Although, I mean, you know, there's a soft spot in my heart for some of the stuff in the 90s, as bad as it was. But nonetheless, I don't know. There was something slightly disconcerting about it. However, I'm sure if I was still reading, I'd be like, I get it. I see what the character's, you know, gist is.
Well, yeah, I'm going to say, like, I've never read Annihilation, which I hear is really good. I haven't read any of the cosmic Marvel stuff, and I do like... you know, I love sci-fi and I love superheroes. I don't traditionally like them together.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yes, it definitely makes sense.
But I'm excited about the Guardians of the Galaxy movie coming up.
Yes.
And I realized, oh, shit, I don't know anything about these characters. So I better start reading
some.
So I've been reading this. And then I realized, oh, wait, I did used to dig Star-Lord back in the day. And I do want to check out that Rocket Raccoon miniseries. But this is sort of like the, it's a good, like, introduction. I don't want to go into it. I hate, there's nothing worse than going into a comic movie not knowing what the hell is, you know,
yeah,
these characters are about or anything. So And I do feel like this book here is designed to give people an introduction to these
characters.
Because everything else has been so, like, tied into the Thanos quest from 1976 and, you know, sort of like everything has just been sort of this legacy history thing. And this you can just pick up and go. I mean, the very first issue is actually Guardians of the Galaxy Point One, and it's like Star-Lord Peter Quill when he's a little kid. So you get that history. It's kind of like Last Starfighter meets Avengers.
Interesting.
Really. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're clearly going for... I don't know if you said this or somebody else told me this. Pardon me.
Yeah, we got our bottle opener. Here, open yours. No, I love it when this stuff makes it in the cut, actually.
It might make it in the cut,
though.
That's
all right.
Oh,
who?
No,
who, Guardian?
I'm trying to take the beer from you, not the bottle opener.
Thank you, sir.
So... Somebody suggested to me that the push with the Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie, but also just, I guess, aesthetically, Marvel doesn't have a Green Lantern Corp.
Oh, God, do they want one?
And so this is kind of that. But, I mean, I think if you deconstruct the thought behind it, it's like, okay, well, we have the Avengers, and what about the Avengers on a cosmic level, which would mm-hmm. basically be like a Green Lantern Corp. I don't know. I'm really excited for the movie. I think that the Marvel movie universe is just so impressive.
Yeah.
And, you know, the second Thor movie, I thought it was great. I mean, it didn't... structurally, story-wise, it wasn't like, oh, this is, you know, breathtaking and unlike anything I've ever seen. Although, the one thing that I was floored by was the Star Wars element in it. Just, I wasn't prepared for
it. Oh, you mean them flying around in the spaceships?
Very heavy.
I enjoyed it. I really had a good time with that movie.
I really had a good time with it. And, I mean, it's kind of like what you're saying about the superheroes and the cosmic thing. And Marvel's really doing it right. And the best part of Thor 2, to me, was there's a moment where Natalie Portman's character is, you know, ill. She's injured. And they bring her to Asgard. And the technicians are working on her. And they bring up her life force. And they're moving it around. And I said to my wife afterwards, okay, in the first Thor movie, somebody says, I think Thor says to Natalie Portman's character, what you call science, we call magic, basic, same thing. This was illustrating the fact that, because it looked like Tony Stark working at his computer with all the, you know, I don't know, the 3D immersive.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It was the same thing. And I'm like, that's what this movie is. It's the corridor to Guardians of the Galaxy. And then mm-hmm. Guardians of the Galaxy... After that, I mean, what are we talking about here? It's going to be huge. All of the Marvel movies have basically been Earthbound. Thor was the first one that was not primarily Earthbound, and now we're going to go huge. And, I mean, realistically, I feel like the nods to Star Wars was saying, like, yeah, we're going to go there. Only thing I was a little worried about, I don't think it's going to happen, but it crossed my mind, if you've seen the Patton Oswalt Parks and Rec outtake where he pitches his idea, he's like a filibuster...
Talking about Star Wars or something,
and
right?
he's talking about his, you know, this is my idea for the next Star Wars movie, and or is it? Yeah, it's the next Star Wars movie, and he brings in the Avengers and Thanos and whatever. And now that Disney owns all of them, and I saw this in Thor, I was like, oh my god, could this be something that could happen eventually? Because don't mix them.
That'll be fun.
Don't
I
want to
do
them.
A Star Wars Dukes of Hazzard crossover. I was thinking about this the other day.
I would read that,
You've got Bo and Luke. Okay, then you've got Luke and Han. So there's a little confusion with the names, right? But how badass would it be to have Uncle Jesse and Obi-Wan like running a whiskey distillery out in the outskirts of Tatooine?
Oh my God.
Boss Hogg and Jabba the Hutt like try to take that shit?
Wait. This is not the still you are looking for.
Oh. Right?
Now, are we going to go like delivery?
Roscoe and Boba Fett teaming up? Because, I mean, Boba Fett looks badass, but he did like go out pretty easily. Like.
He did go. He's not that. But
yeah, he's kind of a buffoon. He's just a badass-looking buffoon. But
I'm not as big of a Star Wars fan. I mean, I dig it. I grew up with it. I'll go see all the movies as they come out, probably multiple times. I don't own them. I don't go back to it very often. It's just something that I like it, but I'm not as passionate about it as I am about.
Would you like to see the General Lee race a land speeder?
I would like to see that. I would definitely like
some
to see
I obviously put too much thought into this.
No,
week,
I don't think you can put too much thought into the General Lee racing a land speeder.
We have to do that.
Another book.
Hawkeye. I actually read, there's 14 issues out so far. Number 16 comes out Wednesday. Do the math. They're skipping number 15. They're going to come back to that later.
Really?
Yeah, I think the artist is taking too long or something. But anyway, number 11 is definitely the highlight of the series thus far. It's all told from the perspective of the dog. Pizza Dog or Lucky Dog or whatever you want to call him. And he's analyzing a murder. And the dialogue, I don't want to give too much away. Like, I hate, who's the guy that does Jimmy Corrigan? Chris Ware?
Maybe, I'm not going
to
think
of it. Yeah, another guy who's trying to prove how smart he is, right? In designing. And this has a lot of design elements, and it is a smart book. But, again, it's got to connect with you at an emotional level, and this series does. If you read it all back to back to back, you read it, right?
No, I've not read it.
Well, do you read it?
Yeah.
Not a lot happens in Hawkeye, but it's almost like the Seinfeld of superheroes.
The in-between spots?
Kind of, so yeah. I mean, basically the gist of the series is that he bought an apartment building. So
really?
Yeah, Clint Barton, you know, he's Hawkeye. He's got a lot of money, I guess, and he bought an apartment building that he was living in. So it's him dealing with the tenants and dealing with, you know, the occasional murder or the villain. The running villains in the series are these guys in these tracksuits. But yeah, it's a fun
series. I didn't know this about this book. I thought it was, I don't know what I thought it was. I guess I thought it was more like Wade's Daredevil is kind of like a companion, right? And
to this?
I mean, I guess companion's the wrong word, but it seems like they're both from the same strategy. Like the design is similar. They relaunched around the same time, and it seemed like they were like, let's do something different with it.
The thing that they have in common that I really like and I wish comics would get back to is that each issue is a complete experience for the most part.
Okay.
Which comics have gotten away from. Like, you know, people come in all the time and they're like, oh, you know, I want to read Avengers.
But where do I start?
I mean, even, you know, our boy Rick Remender is a little guilty of not having that complete experience. I mean, he gives
a
complete experience, but not like Wade's Daredevil or Fractions Hawkeye does, where it's like you could pick up any issue and by the end of that issue, sure, you want to get the next one, but you don't have to.
Right. This you have to read.
Right.
Like, you will not read one and then be like, oh, I can skip one, because it's so, everything rolls, like, this issue ends, rolls directly into the next one. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do also like the kind of standalone, not necessarily standalone, but, you know, I had no idea it was about something so, like, every day is he owns an apartment building, and I don't know what I thought it was, but
there's
I didn't
think
it was
named that. Grills that grills out on the roof all the time.
That's crazy.
I won't tell you what happens, but
that's crazy. Uh-oh. Joe knows what happens.
Somebody's gonna have to flip those burgers. Let's just put it that way.
Nice. All right. I have to read that book. I've been my good friend from my, this is my comic store in LA, in California. My good friend, another Mike in Chicago at Amazing Fantasy, my old comic shop, which I always visit and try to buy some stuff at when I go back home, because I am from Chicago. He's been telling me Hawkeye, and you always bring it up, and Joe likes it. And
yeah, I don't know what you're waiting for.
It was just one of those things. Well, it was sold out a lot early on.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess it was one of those things where it was like I just could never find the jumping on point. I know it's there, and now it's in trade, so I just got to buy the trade.
Every issue is a jumping on point. He never wears a costume. You only see the Hawkeye mask one time in the series. Do you remember when that is? That's when he's naked and they're shooting at him and he jumps across the bed and they censored his...
With the mask?
Yeah, his whatever arrow.
His quill.
His quill with a
what
Hawkeye
more
mask.
Do you need? Oh my God.
So there you go.
Wow, that's...
Your turn. See, we talked about these.
All right, so... Oh, so...
School me, because I don't know anything about this other than it's Joe Hill.
Wraith. By Joe Hill. He's an amazing author. So I had a bunch of friends that were like, read Joe Hill. Didn't read Joe Hill. I finally read Heart-Shaped Box. Blew my mind. Great book.
Which is not a comic.
Not a comic.
Right.
So got me onto the Joe Hill thing. Earlier this year, he released a novel called Nosferatu. Wraith is... It's like a prequel... but it doesn't deal with all of the characters. It deals mainly with the villain. And
from Nosferatu?
From Nosferatu. The villain is a guy named Charlie Manx. He's a very terrible person. And He has this... It's kind of like a take on vampires, which you can kind of guess from the title Nosferatu, although not as blatant as that title suggests. But he basically has this place that he goes that's in his head, but he can also access and take other people to in the real world, and it's called Christmas Land because he loves Christmas. And he brings little kids there, and then they become these kind of evil things as he basically kind of just feeds on their life force and leaves them as these things that are evil and like filled with sharp needle teeth. And it's really interesting because now, actually, the book is following like the early Charlie Manx years. And he's got the Wraith is a old Rolls Royce, I think it's 38 maybe, and it's a beautiful car. And that's part of his power, or whatever you want to call it, to get to Christmas Land, hinges on this car. And the car kind of has its own sentience about it. But, it's really interesting, the book. So this book, and then having read Nosferatu, and now I'm reading Dr. Sleep, the Stephen King Shining sequel.
Yeah, which Joe Hill is Stephen King's son.
It's awesome. He never used the name. He just uses his, Hill is his middle name. Yeah. If you look at him, you're like, he's Stephen King's son, clearly. He's fantastic. But it's really interesting where now I'm reading the Shining sequel, Dr. Sleep, and the characters that are like the bad guys in this are the same animal as Charlie Manx. And they've been referencing one another. Charlie Manx is directly referenced in the Shining sequel. They've been kind of bringing their stuff together, but not in a really like overly bearing, like we're father and son and now we're gonna make one big mega universe. It's really subtle and it's really cool, and this is just kind of drawing it out a little bit, and the art's great. It's just twisted, man. It's very twisted. Charles Paul Wilson III.
They collaborated on Road Rage, too, didn't they?
Yes, they did, which I did not read.
Duel, and I think maybe Joe Hill wrote a sequel to Duel.
It's something like that. I forget.
And they put it out as a comic book, too.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And obviously Joe Hill may be most famous for Lock and Key, which now my friend John Bickness will smack me in the mouth because I brought him here shortly after I started coming to the store. He came to visit me, and he's like, you're not leaving until you're buying the first trade of Lock and Key. And, what's that again?
Have you bought it?
I bought the first trade of Lock and Key. I bought the second trade. I have not bought any of the rest. I rebought both to give as gifts to some people. I think it's fantastic. I just have not bought the trades that I need to. So, John, when you see me, you can smack me. That's fine. Make sure I have a couple beers in me first.
It just ended, too, so you'll be able to catch up.
I know.
Yeah. I'm going to skip Batman. We'll talk about that next episode because I feel like we have to, But while we're on a horror tip, Afterlife with Archie, which you don't
read I have yet, not read this. I've heard nothing but good things.
It's fantastic. It's, I really don't care about Archie so much. And I don't... And I'm sick of zombie comics. But... Again, like peanut butter and chocolate, these things just make something that you've had so much and so often and so everywhere. You put it together, and it's just amazing. And it doesn't hurt that Francesco Francavilla draws it. And I'm a big fan of like the Mondo poster kind of aesthetic of things. And it, again, like from the matte cover to like the very basic, simple color scheme.
It looks awesome.
And dude, like, Jughead gets bit by a zombie dog and becomes a zombie in the first issue. Spoiler alert.
So it's not like, oh, quirky Archie zombies.
No, this is gruesome, dude.
Really?
Like, okay. They do things you shouldn't do in an Archie comic, which is what I love about it. Yeah, it's really good.
All right. That's
yeah, and
cool.
I don't know how long this team is going to stay with the book or if this thing... I mean, I just don't know how much
you
life
can get
or afterlife there will be with this series. But number 3 came out. It's selling gangbusters, and yeah, it's great. It's cool. It's like one of those things so wrong it can only be right.
Right, right.
So yeah, Afterlife with Archie. Check it out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not one for zombie anything. I mean, I like the first couple Romero movies. There's a few other movies I like, and I like The Walking Dead, which.
Do you read Walking Dead?
I read Walking Dead. It's probably still the best book I read every month. It has been for years. The show, not so much. It has high points. It has needs some work occasionally. It's good. I mean, I get why people like it, but it just doesn't hold a candle to the book. The book is literally, for you, when I would get my comics mailed to me from Chicago once a month, there was the one It wasn't even a rule. It wasn't like I told my wife, this is the way it is, because she'd just smack me. She just knew, when he gets his comics, give him 10 minutes to read Walking Dead. It doesn't matter if the house is on fire or whatever. It takes 10 minutes to read. It's amazing. It's such an awesome book. If you like the show, recently a guy I work with, he loves the show.
Mm-hmm.
I got him to read the first couple issues. I went out of town for 4 days. I came back. He's like, dude, I read everything. Oh, my God. We have to talk about this.
It's funny. You know, it's funny. My partner here, who's the ultimate workhorse, when we get the shipment. And, you know, when we get our books, our shipment, there's a lot of stuff that has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But he always takes, you know, like you said, 10 minutes to read Walking Dead and, you know, before he can get Zen and get back to work.
It's so, just, it's so good.
I read the first trade. I guess I need to, I don't know, maybe I need to read it. I don't feel like I need to read it because I feel like everybody else reads it. So I think that
The way it worked for me, Mike at the comic shop in Chicago, when I still lived in Chicago, he would tell me over and over again, read Walking Dead, read Walking Dead. And I would always be like, no, not interested. Zombies overdone. And this is in like 2003 or 4. So if zombies were overdone then,
oh yeah,
they're really overdone now. But he gave me the first 4 trades for Christmas 1 year. And I was like, well, now I'm going to read it. I read the first 4 trades. By the time I was done with them, I went in the next day. I bought issue 25, and I've been hooked ever since. And it's just
if only you started collecting 6 months earlier.
Why?
Because Michonne's first appearance in number 19 is worth like $600 now.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's okay. You're there now. You're reading.
I'm there now.
It's all good.
Damn, $600.
Yeah. Your turn.
Let's do... Okay. Terry Moore, who did Strangers in Paradise and Echo. I've never read Echo. And I've never read all of Strangers in Paradise.
Who did?
I know it's worth reading. Kidding. I just haven't gotten around to it. I mean, you're right, but Rachel Rising.
It's like who read all Cerebus? Nobody.
That's true.
But go ahead. Sorry.
Rachel Rising is, you know, and it's just amazing. Terry Moore, it's totally independent. I mean, this is, you know, Abstract Studio. That's Terry Moore's imprint. It's very, very independent. It's very, very good. And I guess a lot of people are not reading it. And he tweeted last month about numbers just being really, really low. And so there were a bunch of us online. I write a comic column weekly on a website called Joupe. joup.co. And it's called The Comic Column. The with a T-H-E-E. Little plug, but... you get more of this kind of thing there. A bunch of us really tried to raise awareness because it's such a good book, and there's so many people I know not reading it. And, I mean, now especially, I wanted them to read it before, but now I want them to read it because it's Terry Moore, and it's awesome, and I want it to keep going because I want to know what happens. And
is he saying that he's going to have to stop? Or?
Well, I mean, he didn't say that, but I believe the tweet was something like, when numbers were this low with Strangers in Paradise, I pretty much ended the series.
Mm-hmm.
And this book, and it's so weird, there's such a zeitgeist going on right now in popular culture with, there's a show called Salem, there's a obviously American Horror Story Coven, there's like Witches of East End or something. There's witchcraft is back in the culture in like a huge way. And this, I feel like, I'm not saying that they're ripping him off, but there's this, like, I believe in the collective unconscious and whatnot, and there's usually something that's like introduces it into the awareness and then it spreads.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe this did it, because this is the basic premise of the book is Rachel, who's the main character, wakes up in a grave and she's dead and she's got a noose burn around her neck and every blood vessel in her eyes have exploded and she's dead. She doesn't breathe, she doesn't function like a human, but she's conscious and she's completely aware of herself and she's like, I need to find out who murdered me. And then it goes from there. And it just keeps getting deeper, and it touches on, it goes back to kind of like the Salem witch trials and all this weird biblical, like, mythology that he works in. And it's Jack the Ripper. It's just, it's so good.
Is this, I feel like it's supposed to be a finite series, is it? Or
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know that he's ever said.
I know
said.
Echo was, and then...
Echo was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have to... I feel like, because of the nature of the story, that he has to know where it's going. But he probably also is like, well, I know I need this many issues,
right,
or roughly that, to get there. If it's going well, you can always kind of follow, you know, different fancies as a writer. You're like, what if I explored this character a little bit more or whatever? I just wanted to get the chance to, excuse me, at least go that far to get to what he wants as the ending. And again, I mean, it's Terry Moore. The art is just unbelievable. And it's just so good. It reminds me of like when I would read Stray Bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Which is coming back in
March.
It's
coming back, yeah.
That'll be the next one. We probably talk about Stray Bullets.
We could, and I'm hoping, I mean, God, fingers crossed that we can have him here soon.
That would be amazing. David Lapham, possibly, at the comic book.
That would be, like,
would be amazing.
Chocolate and peanut butter.
Yes. No, no, that would be like, well, yes, because it's good, yeah, but I mean, it would be like
Stars and Stripes or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I will say, you know, I don't read Rachel Rising personally, but the book does well here at the shop. But for you out there listening, if there's an independent comic you like out there, it really is important to spread the word to your local retailer, spread the word to fellow fans, friends, readers, aficionados of comics, you know, hip them to this stuff because it is really hard out there for these guys. That, you know, Terry Moore does it all himself.
Yeah, right, he does everything.
He has no marketing, PR department, none of that. But what he does have is a lot of talent and, you know,
crazy.
I can just see he puts a lot of love in this book, so... You know, you can't be everywhere at once and do everything at once.
Right,
and, right. You know, but I mean, if we can, what we do here helps spread the word. Check out Rachel Rising.
Yeah, yeah. Check it out. I mean, if you don't like it,
smack him in the face.
Smack me in the face.
I didn't tell you to read it.
I apologize, but you know, give it a shot. It's a really really good book. Especially if you're really into. I know a lot of people are into American Horror Story Coven. I haven't seen that yet. I'm still finishing the second season. I'm sure it's fantastic because the first two seasons are fantastic. But if you're, you know. If you like that, definitely check out Rachel.
So it's a horror book, essentially.
But it is, but it's like American Horror Story, which is a little bit more horrific. Rachel Rising, it's more dramatic, and there's more drama than horror, but there are horror elements. And the best horror is always the stuff that's not just hack, hack, hack.
Right.
It's the stuff that has a very human element and... Not just human, like, oh, I get to know these characters for 20 minutes and then they die and I feel bad they die because I know he wanted to be, you know, promoted and I know she was going to chase her dreams or whatever. Now they're dead. Not like that. There's a lot of very nuanced interpersonal relationships going on and just some... I'll stop.
Awesome. They just wanted to do a podcast and now they're dead.
Right. There you go.
Next up, Black Science. God, we got to stop talking about this Remender guy. Black Science is a lot of fun. It's about not astronauts, dimensionauts.
Is that what they're officially called?
I read somewhere. I couldn't make a word like that up myself. But yeah, so they, you know, they're going to be, you know, journeying through dimensions and time and space, and kind of like a very sort of messed up, twisted Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah, like that, Lost in Space. It's great. I've read. We're waiting on three, right?
Number two is sold out. You can't find it anywhere.
Fantastic book.
It's gone up in value, which is always a good thing. But yeah, I mean, I was a big Fear Agent fan, and you know that ended. It kind of ran its course.
Now that was pretty much the book. I've not read it, but that
you haven't read Fear Agent?
Not yet. No.
Oh, dude,
that is the book basically like he really cut his teeth on. Correct, Remender.
Well, he'd done some things before that, but I think Fear Agent's better than Watchmen. Fear Agent's better than almost anything anybody could tell you about.
But, I mean, is it like apples and oranges, or is it?
Either you like apples or you like oranges. I always say Temple of Doom is the greatest movie of all time. Well, it's not better than Sophie's Choice.
Yeah,
you really can't compare it to. You
can't really make.
I know I can. I can tell you what I would prefer.
Well, there you go.
And Fear Agent's comic.
I will say thank you because I get a lot of crap for liking Temple of Doom.
Movie of all time.
Sorry, it's not. I don't think it's the best movie of all time.
We'll talk
about
that next
episode.
It's
the best Indiana Jones.
What's your favorite movie?
Donnie Darko, but not the director's cut, the original cut.
Dude, I wasn't questioning which, but okay.
No, you know what? It's funny, and we'll probably wrap it here. But I'll just say, it's the kind of thing, you know. If you ask me, do you have a favorite band? I can't say that.
Right.
Do you have a favorite song? Do you have a favorite album? I can't say that. There's so much stuff I like, and when I'm in the mood. And it strikes me, I like, you know, Black Sabbath Sabotage. I've been listening a lot lately. But in 2 weeks, I probably won't listen to it for 6 months. Not because it's bad. It's just, okay, that's not the area of my personality that goes there.
Mm-hmm.
It was always like that with film, too, until I saw Donnie Darko. Not the director's cut. Nothing wrong with the director's cut, but it's just not, to me, not as good. It's my favorite movie.
It's probably, you know why you like the original cut better than the director's cut? It's probably because that's how you first experienced it.
You're probably right. It's like, although I feel like the director's cut maybe takes, it gives you a little bit too much information and takes away some of the conversation, like some of the what did I just see? I have to talk about this with someone now. I have to show this to other people because I don't know how to process it fully on my own. So let's have a discussion about it, because that's what, you know, is so great about reading comics, reading books, watching movies, drinking beer. You find other people like the things that you like and you talk about it. And I mean, that's what being human is. You talk about stuff. We're not really out of time because
I will say, dude, thank you for the beer.
Thank you for letting us use your wonderful store.
Oh, no worries, man.
I would love to do it again. Love to do it all the time.
When we hit 700 likes on YouTube or whatever, we'll do it again. It's up to you, America.
Let's do it again before 700 likes.
Yeah, well, we'll do it again, but we'll just, you know, we won't tell them that we did it until we hit 700 likes.
You have a strange circular logic.
It's called marketing, brother.
Okay, all right. Cool. So anyway, Drinking with Comics, this will be on YouTube soon, and there is a website that will be coming. It's not up yet, but
it's called drinkingwithcomics.com?
Yeah.
Or .org?
I bought it for $10.
Wow, nice.
From Namecheap, I think?
Dude, you paid more for the beer.
No, I didn't, but close. Very close. Anyway, awesome. We'll be back. Just keep drinking responsibly and reading comics. So, good night.
Cheers.